I think that's right, Rhett. They reported Collins being sound asleep long before the astronauts and the Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
Collins would have remained in his couch, Rhett, since he was the only one in the spacecraft.
Not much happening here now. Of course, the astronauts are all behind the moon, out of touch with us here on Earth. 25 minutes until acquisition of the command module, 28 minutes until acquisition of the lunar module. At the time of this CSI maneuver, the Eagle should have been about 267 kilometers distant, below and behind the command module, and some 83 kilometers above the surface of the moon. The second maneuver comes 58 minutes after that first. That second, or CDH maneuver, will come at about 19 hours 50.
We're now 125 hours and 28 minutes into the flight of Apollo 11, both spacecraft still behind the moon. The Voice of America, broadcasting from the Apollo News Center in Washington, from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, with continuous coverage of the moon landing, moonwalk mission. This program is originating in Washington.
Would you like to have a color photograph of the three Apollo 11 astronauts? We would be happy to send you one if you write to The Voice of America, Washington, D.C., USA, Box 8108. Citizens of the United States are not eligible.
This is The Voice of America. We will return to our live coverage of the mission of Apollo 11 following this report of late world news.
Today is the Apollo moon landing holiday in the United States, and millions of Americans who watch the Sunday moon walk are continuing to follow the mission's progress. President Nixon, as he spoke to the moonwalkers, stressed that the Apollo achievement made all the world's people truly one. Former President Lyndon Johnson, in a television interview, said that if Americans can go to the moon, they can do anything that needs to be done in their hometowns on Earth. In South Vietnam, American soldiers stayed up all night, clustered around transistor radios to listen to the Apollo mission account. Hundreds of thousands of other Americans last night watched huge television screens at Apollo celebration rallies across the country, including New York, Philadelphia, Washington, and Chicago. In the Los Angeles area, at a track meet, Soviet team members clapped American athletes on the back and congratulated them. Jodrell Bank Observatory reports that the Soviet Union's unmanned Luna 15 spacecraft has apparently landed on the moon, but it's uncertain whether it made a soft landing or crashed. Sir Bernard Lovell, station director, reported that the spacecraft landed at a site near the Sea of Crises, about 800 kilometers from the Apollo 11 astronauts in the Sea of Tranquility. The United States will issue new regulations Wednesday, easing restrictions on travel to Communist China and trade with that country. A State Department spokesman said Americans abroad would be permitted to bring into the United States limited quantities of goods originating in Communist China for non-commercial purposes. And he said the new regulations will authorize validation of passports for travel to China for certain categories of people. These include congressmen, journalists, teachers, scholars, college students, physicians, scientists, and Red Cross representatives. Former United States Vice President Hubert Humphrey met for 2.5 hours with Soviet Premier Alexei Kosygin today in Moscow. Mr. Humphrey said the Soviet leader asked him to tell the American president and people that the Soviet Union wants to work with the United States in the cause of peace. In South Vietnam, communist gunners launched 18 overnight rocket and mortar attacks against Allied bases and towns. Only light casualties and damage were reported. The United States command announced the end of a military operation by South Korean and United States troops along the coast near Da Nang. It was the third large Allied operation closed out in the northern provinces in the past week. Israel and Egypt engaged in several exchanges of artillery fire along the Suez Canal today, including the Bitter Lake, Ferdan, and North Kantara areas. Israel said two of its soldiers were wounded. Earlier today, Israel denied an Egyptian report of heavy Israeli shelling of the city of Suez at the southern tip of the waterway. In Algiers, the first Pan-African Cultural Festival was formally opened today by Algerian President Houari Boumediene. The 10-day festival brings together about 4,000 artists and intellectuals from 30 independent African countries. A complaint was filed against Senator Edward Kennedy in Edgartown, Massachusetts, today, charging him with leaving the scene of an automobile accident. A young woman was killed, and Senator Kennedy is slightly injured early Saturday when the car he was driving ran off a bridge. The senator, who said he was in a state of shock after the accident, did not report it to police for several hours. The police chief who filed the complaint said a lawyer representing the senator had petitioned for a hearing to be held next Monday. Mrs. Robert Goddard, widow of the first man to experiment with liquid fuel rockets, watched the lunar walk of astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin at her home in Worcester, Massachusetts. Mrs. Goddard said her husband would have been so happy to watch the moon landing. He wouldn't have shouted or anything, she said. He would just have glowed. Dr. Goddard, whose basic concepts of rocketry made the Apollo missions possible, died in 1945, his dream of sending a rocket to the moon unfulfilled. That's the news from the Voice of America newsroom. This is Bob White reporting.
This is the Voice of America broadcasting worldwide with continuing live coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Now 125 hours and 35 minutes into the flight. A successful launch from the lunar surface by the lunar landing craft Eagle about an hour and 10 minutes ago. The crucial liftoff was called by the crew beautiful, a real smooth ride. The ascent engine upon which the landing craft crewmen staked their lives ignited on schedule, then lifted the spider-shaped craft away from the lunar surface, which had for some 21 hours and 30 minutes played host to the moon's first visitors from Earth. We're now in the midst of the various orbital maneuvers, the rendezvous with the mother spacecraft about 2 hours away. Rendezvous at 110 miles, or rather 110 kilometers, above the surface of the moon. Let's get a status report now from correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. We don't hear correspondent Turner coming through on our circuits, but we'll hear from him, of course, later on during this broadcast. As we will repeat that, the spacecraft, both spacecraft behind the moon, we should be acquiring signal in roughly 20 minutes or so, 125 hours and 36 minutes into their flight. Norman Guerin?
Man has now walked on the moon. American astronauts Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin are on their way again after showing the world what it looks like on the moon. Their adventure began at 13 hours 32 GMT on the morning of Wednesday, July 16th. The liftoff atop the giant Saturn V rocket was flawless and every step of the way perfect. On Saturday, July 19th at 17 hours 13 GMT, Apollo 11 went behind the moon, losing communications briefly with the Earth. Then came the go-ahead for the first crucial maneuver, insertion into lunar orbit, or LOI. Here's the way VOA's Rhett Turner described that moment from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston.
The Service Propulsion System engine is scheduled to burn and slow Apollo 11 into lunar orbit. This is what is called LOI number one, Lunar Orbit Insertion Burn number one, by the main rocket engine, the SPS. Here's Mission Control.
Flight controllers for the go, no-go status for LOI now.
That was Jack Riley in Mission Control saying that the flight controllers were about to give the astronauts the status for a go, no-go. Let's stand by if we hear any communication. That noise you hear is the air-to-ground or moon-to-earth communications link with the spacecraft. All three astronauts rather quiet. You can hear astronaut Bruce McCandless in the Mission Control Center whenever he speaks to the crewmen. The policy on all of these space flights is for one of their fellow astronauts to be what is called the capsule communicator, or CAPCOM, and to relay all messages from everyone else.
Apollo 11, this is Houston, over.
That's McCandless calling the spacecraft.
Roger, go ahead, Houston, Apollo 11.
That's all.
Apollo 11, this is Houston. You are go for LOI, over.
Go for LOI.
Roger, go for LOI.
At 17 hours 21 GMT, the Apollo 11 spacecraft dropped into lunar orbit, confirmed by Flight Commander Neil Armstrong.
On the pug, now 44, showed us, you know, 60.9 by 169.9.
That's Neil Armstrong,
Roger,
the command
we
pilot.
Your burn status report.
His quote was, "It was like perfect."
And,
it was like
spacecraft
perfect.
Spacecraft is looking good to us on telemetry.
After their first lunar orbit, astronauts Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin climbed into their lunar landing module to check out all the various systems which would have to function for their landing on the moon.
I call home, Mick Charlie, to get back in the lab again.
But I can imagine.
From the bottom of the rim to the aft bulkhead of the command module must be about 16, 20 feet. It's not a disorienting one at all, but it's most interesting to contemplate just pushing off from one and bounding on into the other vehicle all the way through the tunnel.
Raj, must be some experience. Is Collins going to go in and look around?
We're willing to let him go, but he hasn't come up with the price of the ticket yet.
Right. I'd advise him to keep his hands off the switches.
Well, I can hear me to keep your hands off my disc. It'll be a fair swap.
Roger.
That's why I've been eating so much today. I haven't had anything to do. He won't let me touch it anymore.
Right.
It checked out fine, so the astronauts clambered back into the command ship for a night's sleep. On Sunday, July 20th, at 17 hours 47 GMT, the two astronauts were back in the lunar module for separation from the mothership Columbia. Astronaut Michael Collins confirmed to Houston Mission Control that separation had taken place.
We have confirmation of acquisition of signal. We'll stand by for a call to the crew.
Hello, Eagle Houston, we're standing by, over. Eagle Houston, we see you on the steerable, over.
Roger, Eagle, time got.
Roger, how does it look?
The Eagle has wings.
Roger.
Looking good.
Looking good, said Mission Control. The Eagle has wings. The Eagle went on to land on the moon 20 hours, 17:42 GMT. Here is the conversation between Eagle and Mission Control from the time the landing craft was less than 10 meters from the lunar surface.
40 feet down, 2.5, picking up some dust. 30 feet, 2.5 down, great shadow.
Four forward, drift into the right a little.
Ready? Down a half. 30 seconds.
Forward, just. Ready? Contact light. Okay, engine stop. APA at a descent. Hose control, both auto descent, engine command override off. Engine arm off. 413 is in.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Eagle has landed. Shortly after the spidery lunar module had set its legs on the lunar surface, astronaut Neil Armstrong explained how he took manual control of the craft as it approached the landing area.
Houston, that may have seemed like a very long final phase. The auto targeting was taking us right into a football field sized crater with a large number of big boulders and rocks for about a 1 or 2 crater diameters around it. And it required us gunning P-66 and flying manually over the rock field to find a reasonably good area.
Astronaut Neil Armstrong. His companion in the lunar landing craft, Buzz Aldrin, looked out the window and described his initial impressions of the moon.
Now, we'll get to the details of what's around here, but it looks like a collection of just about every variety of shape, angularity, granularity, but every variety of rock you could find. The color is, it varies pretty much depending on how you're looking relative to the zero phase point. There doesn't appear to be too much of a general color at all. However, it looks as though some of the rocks and boulders, of which there are quite a few in the near area, looks as though they're going to have some interesting colors to them, over.
Then came the final preparations for man's first step on the lunar surface. Astronaut Neil Armstrong went through the long countdown, guided by mission control.
Window is a relatively level plane cratered with a fairly large number of craters of the 5 to 50 foot variety, and some ridges, small 20, 30 feet high, I would guess, and literally thousands of little 1 and 2 foot craters around the area. We see some angular blocks out several hundred feet in front of us that are probably 2 feet in size and have angular edges. There is a hill in view just about on the ground track ahead of us. Difficult to estimate, but might be a half a mile or a mile.
And then at last, the first shadowy pictures came back to Earth. Man was on the moon. Again, for our Voice of America radio audience, Rhett Turner described what happened.
Neil has stepped down. He's now down on the foot pad. Armstrong's foot is on the foot pad.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
It's very dark.
We can see. Okay, I just checked getting back up to that first step. It's not even collapsed too far, but it's adequate to get back up. Roger, we copy. It's a pretty good little jump.
He wants to check how hard it is to get back up to that first step. It's quite a reach. He has a foot down on the foot pad. We can't tell if he's stepped off onto the surface
yet. This is Houston, F2, 1/160th second for shadow photography on the sequence camera.
It's a silhouetted picture. It's very difficult
to
see.
Ladder, the LAM foot pads are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very
very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine.
Armstrong is standing on the footpad. We can see him moving around now. He is undoubtedly...
I'm going to step off the land now.
He's stepping off. He has put his left foot off on the surface of the moon. Man is
That's
on the moon.
One small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.
One small step for man, one giant leap for man. Neil Armstrong's first words on the surface of the moon.
After the two astronauts became accustomed to their lunar excursion, they received a telephone call on the moon from President Nixon at the White House.
Neil and Buzz, the President of the United States is in his office now and would like to say a few words to you. Over.
That would be an honor.
Go ahead, Mr. President. This is Houston out.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. And this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made. I just can't tell you how proud we all are of what you... For every American, this has to be the proudest day of our lives. And for people all over the world, I am sure they too join with America in recognizing what an immense feat this is. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth. For one priceless moment, in the whole history of man, all the people on this earth are truly one. One in their pride in what you have done, and one in our prayers that you will return safely to Earth.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a great honor and privilege for us to be here representing not only the United States, but man of peace of all nations, man with interest and a curiosity, and man with a vision for the future. Honor for us to be able to participate here today.
And thank you very much, and I look forward, all of us look forward to seeing you on the Hornet on Thursday.
Look forward to that very much, sir.
President Nixon talking from the White House to astronauts Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin on the moon. Now, at 125 hours and 51 minutes into the flight of Apollo 11, after 21 hours, 36 minutes, and 30 seconds on the lunar surface, astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin came to the moment of liftoff, the untried, untestable takeoff from the moon. At 17 hours, 54 minutes GMT, Eagle's ascent engines roared to life, and the word came from Mission Control.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, work stage, engine arm ascent, proceed. Shadow, beautiful. 26, 36 feet per second up. 5, for the pitch over. Very smooth. Balance couple off. Very quiet ride. There's that one crater on there.
Thousand feet high, 80 feet per second vertical rise.
Eagle Houston, request manual start override.
Roger. 2,600 feet altitude.
Clear. No.
Nope. Houston, 1 minute, you're looking good.
Roger.
Feet vertical rise rate.
A little bit of slow wallowing back and forth. Not very much thruster activity.
Roger, mighty fine.
$700, $150 up, beautiful. 9,000. AAG degrees within a foot per second.
Eagle Houston, you're looking good at 2. Ping, Zags, and Mitzvahn all agree.
8 minutes later, Eagle made it into lunar orbit once more.
This is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with continuing live coverage of the flight of Apollo 11, man's first landing and walk on the moon. That mission, now 125 hours and 54 minutes into the flight.
Here's Mission Control calling Columbia. Houston calling Columbia. Acquisition as Columbia comes around the east side of the moon. Still a minute and 40 seconds until the lunar module should come around. We'll probably get some confirmation from Mike Collins in just a moment as to how this CSI, concentric sequence initiation burn, came off there in the lunar module. We are assuming, of course, that the LEM, that Eagle and Columbia were talking to each other around behind the moon during the last 40-something minutes. The two spacecraft should be in the same orbital plane, and the lunar module should be on an orbit just inside that of the command module. Eagle should be just inside the Columbia. We heard one call, one bit of unclear communication there with Columbia. I think Columbia and Eagle are still talking to each other. Sometimes we don't hear all of that back here on Earth. The first of several important maneuvers. That's Columbia calling very weakly. Houston, Columbia, over. We could understand Mike Collins saying. That is the noise of the radio signal coming back through the unified S-band. Another call from Mike Collins. Takes a while again, as usual, we might repeat, to lock in on these signals each time. Sometimes a bit of tuning up by the large tracking antennas around the world, at Goldstone, California, in Australia, at Honeysuckle Creek, and at Park. Also at Madrid, Spain. That's the network of equally spaced, large tracking dishes, which can always be in touch with a spacecraft out in space.
Columbia, Houston, you're very weak. Say again.
I don't think he has his high-gain antenna up. CSI was nominal, Mike says. Mike Collins reporting the CSI was nominal. Very weak signal.
Columbia, Houston, you're about one by. Just barely make you out. Can't understand.
That's either Owen Garriott or Bruce McCandless there in Mission Control. I can't quite tell which. Houston, Columbia, how now? A call from Mike Collins. It's possible my earphone is just as good as that of the capsule communicator. They're more used to hearing them than am I, however. They train with those questions. Another word or two from Mike. Mike Collins' voice cuts right through, usually. He made another call. I just don't think he has that antenna aligned quite properly yet. Houston, Columbia, over. Another call from Mike. Through the noise. One by means very, very weak. Again, in pilot's terms, a fairly common thing with anyone who operates on two-way radio, whether you're a pilot or a ham operator. Another call, Houston, Columbia, over. Said Mike Collins. Still not lined up very well.
Houston, this is Eagle, over.
Ah, Eagle, very clear.
Houston, loud and clear. Columbia was very weak. We were unable to read him.
Eagle, in acquisition.
Roger, we saw you come up over the horizon, and it looked like you had a laser operating. Could you confirm that? Eagle, Houston, stand by. We'll check it.
Eagle, coming around.
And Eagle, Houston, can you give us a burn report? Roger, stand by.
That was Buzz Aldrin saying, looks like you had a laser operating. He must have seen a bright spot of light coming up from the Earth. I would have no doubt that many of the scientists and the big telescopes are attempting to shine a laser beam through their telescopes.
Okay, the CSI burn was on schedule time at 125.193470. 51.5 feet per second with our solution. After chasing residuals a little bit, we ended up with minus 0.2, plus 0.7, and minus 0.1. And in the ags at that time, we had plus 0.4, plus 0.9, and plus 0.3.
There is the burn report from Buzz Aldrin.
Eagle Houston, we copy. Any plane change, over?
After a burn,
there was no plane change on CSI, and CSM had a 2.3 foot per second burn. We had a 2.9, and we elected to postpone that. Over. Roger, we copy. Eagle, thank you.
They're in the same plane. This is very, very important because anything which causes a change in the orbital plane of the spacecraft requires considerable energy in order to remedy and to affect a rendezvous. This is the Voice of America bringing you coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. You're listening to Conversations Between the Moon and the Earth, coming to you from Houston and Washington.
Roger, Houston. Do you have some high gain angles for Columbia, over? Roger, Eagle and Columbia, stand by. We'll have them for you shortly.
Mike Collins is still trying to call in from the Columbia spacecraft.
Houston, could you verify you switched lithium hydroxide canisters, over?
This is the air cleaner system to make sure they have pure air.
That's affirmative. We started getting an erratic indication on primary, so we switched to secondary, and it was again erratic, and I thought it might have been a sensor, but it's settled down now, and we're on the secondary, over. Roger, we copy. Modifying.
Lithium hydroxide is the chemical through which the spacecraft air is circulated to remove
Columbia
carbon dioxide.
And Eagle, request Omni Delta for Columbia.
Mike Collins is not using the high gain antenna. He's being asked to use Omni Antenna Delta. I can hear him talking, can't understand him.
Yeah, Houston, Columbia's been on Delta, but he hasn't had much luck with you.
Columbia is on Omni Delta, or D.
Eagle, Houston, Roger, we copy.
Mike is clearly understandable to Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, and Eagle, they're transmitting on VHF directly between the two spacecraft, some 200 kilometers apart, possibly less at this point. They're coming up on the second of those two maneuvers in about 16 minutes from now. The CDH, or the co-elliptic maneuver, to cause a constant height differential between the two spacecraft to be maintained. In other words, Eagle would be just inside the orbit of Columbia a few kilometers, and this would remain unchanged. From that point, they can then begin the later final maneuvers for rendezvous. Back to Washington now. We'll report in a few minutes from Houston.
The Voice of America continuing its live coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Now, 126 hours, 3 minutes, and 30 seconds into the flight. The craft Eagle, the lunar landing craft Eagle, on its way back up to 110 kilometers above the surface of the moon to rendezvous with the mother spacecraft Columbia. This program is originating in Washington. We will return to our live Voice of America coverage of the mission of Apollo 11 following this report of late world news.
Officials at Jodrell Bank Observatory say they are still uncertain whether or not the Soviet Luna 15 spacecraft has survived its landing on the moon. Monitored telemetry data indicated the craft plunged to the Sea of Crises at a high rate of speed, but Sir Bernard Lovell said that this did not mean a complete crash. President Nixon interrupted his watching of the United States moon mission to confer with Gerard Smith, head of the disarmament agency. A spokesman said they discussed subjects expected to come up in the proposed United States-Soviet talks on the limitation of strategic weapons. He said the president hopes the talks can begin by the middle of August. Former Vice President Hubert Humphrey met with Soviet Premier Kosygin in Moscow. He said later that Mr. Kosygin asked him to tell the American president and people that the Soviet Union wants to work with the United States in the cause of peace. The new United States ambassador to West Germany, Kenneth Rush, arrived in Bonn to take up his post. He succeeds Henry Cabot Lodge, now the chief United States delegate to the Paris talks on Vietnam. In South Vietnam, communist gunners launched 18 rocket and mortar attacks during the night against Allied bases and towns. Light damage and casualties were reported. There were no reports of major fighting. Israel and Egypt engaged in several exchanges of artillery fire along the Suez Canal, and Israel said two of its soldiers were wounded. Earlier, an Israeli spokesman denied an Egyptian statement that its forces had fired on the city of Suez. The federal Nigerian government said its Air Force destroyed two unidentified aircraft yesterday in an air battle over Biafra's Uli Ihiala airstrip. Earlier, Radio Biafra said Biafran troops had recaptured a town and suburban areas near their former capital, Umahia. The widow of American pioneering rocket scientist Robert Goddard watched the walk on the moon of the two astronauts last night at her home in Worcester, Massachusetts. She said her late husband would have been so happy to have seen it too. Dr. Goddard died in 1945. He wouldn't have shouted or anything, said Mrs. Goddard. He would just have glowed. That's the news from the Voice of America newsroom. This is Bob White reporting.
This is the Voice of America's worldwide and continuous coverage of the flight of Apollo 11, man's first successful landing on the surface of the moon and first spacewalk on the moon. That mission, now 126 hours and 7 minutes old. The spacecraft Eagle is on its way back up from the surface of the moon after a successful firing of the ascent engine, using orbital mechanics, making orbital changes about every hour, moving ever closer to the mother spacecraft, Columbia, about 110 kilometers above the surface of the moon. The next maneuver should be in about 12 minutes from now. Before we return to Houston and the Mission Control Center, correspondent Rhett Turner, I'd like to talk just a moment with Bill Land. We heard in the news a few minutes ago about the landing of Luna 15 in the Sea of Crisis. Bill and Luna 5, I beg your pardon. Luna 5 on the Sea of Crisis on the moon. Bill, how can you locate that in comparison to the landing of Eagle?
Yes, Bill. We're very near the equator. Eagle was very near the equator and to the west of the location that we've heard that Luna 5 went into. Now, the locating it by the terminology Sea of Crisis allows for considerable error because that's a very, very large area. However, our position in the southwest corner of the Sea of Tranquility with respect to roughly the center of the Sea of Crisis appears at first glance to be around 400 or 500 kilometers. I'd have to get more information on exactly where the Russian craft landed to make it any more precise than that, but that's an initial guesstimate.
How does the surface appear at that point? Is it fairly flat in the Sea of Crisis?
The best that we can tell from the kind of map we've got here is that it is a fairly smooth surface. However, I don't believe it's quite as smooth as the one that where we landed.
That report on the landing of Luna 15, trying to locate it there in the Sea of Crisis, in comparison, of course, to our lunar landing of Eagle on Sunday. Spending some 21 hours and 36 minutes on the surface of the moon, now they are on their way back into for a rendezvous with Columbia, the mother spacecraft. Let's get a status report from correspondent Rhett Turner in Houston.
We're listening to what communication there is.
Reaction to high gain. We should get you then.
Still having trouble locking in Columbia. Mike Collins and Neil Armstrong have been talking to each other. Neil has relayed some of Mike's messages onto Earth. His Omni antenna.
Can you have some angle for him? Roger.
That's
pitch.
Close.
Minus 30. Yaw. 180.
These are angles for Columbia in order to lock in the high gain antenna and reestablish communication.
CDA solution, Mike.
Asking Mike for his CDH solution on board Columbia. They both make calculations for each of these burns. 7 minutes until the constant delta height maneuver, until the second firing of the thrusters on the lunar module on Eagle to make both spacecraft co-elliptic. Make them move in the same ellipse around the surface of the moon. One small circle inside another circle. Mike is trying to lock in. That tiny voice you hear through all the noise is Mike Collins through one of the Omni antennas. And Eagle, the lunar module, is coming in loud and clear. Neil Armstrong relaying most of the messages. The two spacecraft, just about 200 kilometers apart.
Houston, Eagle's got an APS light, a CO2 light. Partial pressure's reading about 0.5 millimeters. Eagle in Columbia, Houston, Roger, we copy.
One of the spacecraft has a CO2 light. That means that the carbon dioxide quantity in the air circulating system is getting up to a warning level. I thought they confirmed that they did change or switched those CO2 removal canisters. Columbia trying to call in again.
Columbia, Houston, go.
Houston says go. Let's see if Mike can talk to them now. Trying to lock in the high gain antenna.
Eagle, Houston, we're sure that's a sensor problem. You can leave it on primary. Okay.
In other words, that CO2 light, the ground, the Earth is sure that it's a sensor problem in the spacecraft, which is causing that warning light to come up.
Circuit breaker.
I pull the circuit breaker, going to primary.
Roger, Eagle.
Continuing to use the primary oxygen supply system. Pulling the circuit breaker, which causes that warning light to remain lit. Apparently a sensor has become faulty. Here on Earth, it looks good.
Water separator apparently isn't working too well. We're getting a lot of water through the suit lift, and we've changed water separators, but it doesn't seem to have improved the situation any.
That's Armstrong. A bit too much moisture coming through the suit loop. The suit air circulation.
Eagle Houston, Roger, we copy.
It says it doesn't appear to impair the overall operation, however. Waiting for Mike Collins to lock in his high-gain antenna, his omnidirectional antennas, which do not have a great transmitting power. There he is. Columbia standing by to back you up on the burn. Mike Collins coming through a bit better now.
Okay, you want to know what our noun 81 is?
Want to know what noun 81 in the computer is? He's ready to copy.
Okay, I think you already got the burn time. Minus 8.1. -1.8, -1.8.2.
That's Buzz Aldrin giving those figures to Mike Collins.
Okay, that's pretty close agreement. And for burn time, I still have 126.17.46.
Right.
That's the time, elapsed time. 126.17.46. That is about 14 seconds off the time that the ground has passed up to the lunar module. They will gradually refine and see if they agree with these figures between the two, and then they probably will burn one or the other or split the difference. It's up to the astronauts themselves as they compare these figures. Mike, of course, preparing what's called mirror image maneuvers.
Eagle Houston, for warm feeling, we are agreeing with your CDH.
Agreeing with CDH, in other words, the new time of 126.17.46. Okay. 2 minutes and 23 seconds until ignition of the CDH RCS thrusters.
Unfortunately, the chart doesn't agree with it because the range rate at 36 minutes was off the chart.
The final rendezvous should begin at 21 hours 11 GMT, and the docking some 15 minutes to 20 minutes after that, about 21 hours 30 GMT. That's when the final docking should occur, right in that vicinity. This is the second of four major maneuvers, or a series of maneuvers, the CDH, or constant delta height maneuver. This is a small thrusting of the reaction control system on the lunar module on Eagle. Only the burn time is expected to be only 1.9 seconds, just under 2 seconds, to put a velocity change of 9.2 feet per second into this orbital parameter, and then cause the lunar module to become co-elliptic, to be moving in a circle which will maintain the same distance from the command module, just slightly inside in a smaller orbit. From this co-elliptic maneuver, once this co-elliptic path is established.
Follow control here. Less than a minute remaining until the constant delta height, our CDH maneuver. We'll continue to monitor the air ground. This is a small magnitude radial burn to put Eagle in a orbit that's concentric with, here we go, 30 seconds.
Once they're co-elliptic, then they can initiate that final terminal phase, pull up alongside.
Yeah, I'm ready. Okay.
38 minutes after this until TPI begins. coming up right now. Very small burn. Very small thrust. We should get confirmation from Eagle. That CDH maneuver should have been completed by now. We'll wait for confirmation. No communication. I'm sure that all three astronauts are busily watching their tracking mechanisms and trying to get a burn report prepared from their display keyboard. They're about 200 kilometers apart, both in orbit around the moon, moving at 4,000 kilometers per hour, some 111 kilometers above the surface. The lunar module, Eagle, slightly less than
burn complete.
Burn complete.
Thank you.
Burn complete, said Neil Armstrong to Mike Collins. No report on exactly whether they are now co-elliptic or not yet. This would mean that the lunar module is about 87 kilometers above the surface, and the command module is about 111 kilometers above the surface, both of them continuing in orbit around the moon, some 200 kilometers apart. CDH, in 38 minutes, TPI, terminal phase initiation, and the beginning of the final rendezvous phase. Now back to Washington.
The Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. Now 126 hours and 20 minutes into that flight. The command module in its 26th revolution around the moon. Once again, I'd like to call on my colleagues here in our Apollo News Center in Washington, John Hammersmith and Bill Land. We heard them use the term mirror image a little earlier on in these maneuvers. What do they mean by that, Bill Land?
The mirror image maneuver is one that's conducted by the command and service module in the event that one of the rendezvous maneuvers of the lunar module should fail to occur. Mirror image means just about what it sounds like it means. The command and service module points in a direction just exactly opposite that of the lunar module, such that if the lunar module were to burn, as it's scheduled to do, it would, in the case of the last burn, lift its orbit slightly to circularize it. If, however, that didn't occur, the command and service module would lower its orbit slightly and accentuate it slightly to get it into a relative height with respect to the lunar module exactly the way it would have occurred had the lunar module done it. The orbits would have been different then from what are pre-planned, but relative to each other, the spacecraft would maintain the same motion. This is done as a rescue precautionary procedure. The command and service module is set up for each of these maneuvers each time in a mirror image fashion and is prepared to do this maneuver should the lunar module maneuver fail.
If I could inject the word of the
John Hammer
of the mathematician here, Bill and Bill, this is in problems of mechanics. This is a problem in relative motion, and the equations of motion for the required maneuvers can be solved either using either of these spacecraft as a reference point. And the way we're handling this mathematically now, the command and service module is being used as the reference point, and the maneuvers are being and the equations are being solved to give the maneuvers for the lunar module. It's quite a simple transformation to use the lunar module as the reference point and derive the thrusting maneuvers for the command and service module. And as Bill Land says, they come out to be the same thing, only in a mirror image way.
John, I can't help but thinking that this is pretty technical when we try to explain it this way, but I think maybe if the listeners were to consider a couple of automobiles driving down the highway, one behind the other, if one automobile speeds up, the one behind speeds up, he will overtake the other one and catch up with him. The same thing, though, would occur if the vehicle behind were to remain at its constant speed and the vehicle ahead were to slow down.
Exactly.
That's what we're saying.
I'd like to go back to the moon. I seem to keep doing that, that stay on the lunar surface. One of our colleagues was asking, I guess yesterday, you know, the fact that we operate in a vacuum around the moon, the lunar module landing on the moon, a pressurized cabin. You remember, of course, they depressurized before they went out. What prevents the walls of that rather thin module from just caving in, since you are in a vacuum?
Well, we always talk about the lunar modules being quite flimsy, the skin being very thin, the structure being just as lightweight as we could possibly make it. Why, this is very true, that the skin is thin. However, the compartment the immediate compartment that the crew is in is the only pressure compartment on board, outside of the fuel tanks and the oxygen tanks and that sort of thing. And this pressure vessel is built much like the pressure vessels of the fuel tanks to take a pressure of about 4.5 pounds. Actually, it's built to take more than that, but it's built to be pressurized in a vacuum, the vacuum outside and pressurized inside. And it's quite strong and is perfectly capable of withstanding the pressures that it's subjected to.
And we might go one step further, Bill. You mentioned when it's depressurized, why doesn't it cave in? And when it's depressurized, then the pressure on the walls is the same as the pressure outside, which is zero, so there are no forces.
The caving in would be when it is pressurized, if that were possible.
Well, that would, if anything were to happen when it were pressurized on the lunar surface, it would not cave in, it would explode.
Blow out, yes.
Blow out. I don't like to talk about this.
Now, as a matter of fact, that lunar module, when it's in the Earth's environment prior to launch, is at an ambient pressure, same pressure as that outside, and it relieves pressure as it
goes up.
That's right.
Still up to the hour.
Now, 125 hours, or rather 126 hours and 25 minutes into the flight of Apollo 11, in the 26th revolution around the moon. Well, continuing our questioning here for a minute or two, what about this matter of moon dust? It would seem to me, after the description of this light charcoal-type dust that the astronauts walked in on the surface of the moon, that they would probably track quite a bit of that back into the lunar module. It seemed to be a fine dust. Isn't it possible that this could clog up some of your air filters, John Hammersmith?
Well, I suppose that it is possible, Bill. Filters are accessible to the astronauts and can be changed. And, of course, this particular situation was not unforeseen. We expected that there would be some particulate matter floating around in the cabin, and we made provisions for them to get as much out of it as possible, and this implies then that you're going to run this stuff through your filtering system.
As a matter of fact, this is one of the precautions taken to ensure that as little as possible of this dust is actually brought back into the command module. The filtering system on the lunar module is designed to take this out. I might also mention that prior to ingressing, getting back in the lunar module from the lunar surface, the crew did kick their boots on the porch to knock off just as much as they could of that dust. However, again, the filtering system is designed to take that dust out as a precautionary measure.
Now, when they dock, Bill, will there be a pressure difference between the command module and the Eagle?
The pressure will be just about the same. There could be a difference, but it'll be very, very minor. The only thing that will be unpressurized will be the tunnel, and that'll have to be pressurized after they dock.
The differential pressure will be in favor of the direction from the command module to the lunar module, or the slight difference.
Oh, as the hatches
as
open,
the
that's
hatches
right.
Open,
there
yes.
will be a positive pressure in the command module with respect to the lunar module. Now, that's done to ensure that the flow of air is from the command module to the lunar module, leaving any of this particulate matter in the LEM.
The Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with continuing coverage of the moon landing flight of Apollo 11. Now 126 hours and 28 minutes into that flight. The lunar spacecraft Eagle on its way back up to rendezvous and dock with the mother spacecraft Columbia. That should come in about an hour and 30 minutes from now at 21 hours 32 Greenwich Mean Time. This program is originating in Washington.